Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Has Sheldon Silver represented you? You know who Sheldon Silver is, right? The Speaker of the New York State Assembly, represents Lower Manhattan, mostly on the East Side, one of the three big power brokers in state politics. We ask if he's represented you because the Daily News has this crowdsourcing project to find the secret clients of Sheldon Silver. No one ever sees him in court, but he reported $700,000 in earnings from his law practice last year, up substantially from the year before, and he's up for re-election. Michael Aronson from the Daily News editorial board joins us now. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello. Glad to be here, Brian.
And what's this all about? What are you fishing around for here?
Well, as you said, Shelley Silver is the speaker. That's his title, but he's really the one-man boss of the state assembly, which is half the legislature up in Albany, and they basically run the state along with the head man in the Senate and the governor, the famous three men in the room.
But the question you're asking is about his work outside the legislature.
Exactly, exactly. Unlike Congress, where members are full-time employees and are actually barred by law and rules of the House and Senate from outside income, you know, you can't work as a plumber. Even those who are physicians have to get special permission to continue to treat patients. In Albany, they're considered part-time employees, so they can do whatever they want in their rest of their time. They can be dentists. I think there was one. Most are lawyers on the outside. And Silver is one. He's been a lawyer before he went to the assembly, I think elected in 76. And under the disclosure rules and laws and forms, they members of the assembly and Senate have to fill out these annual forms saying what their outside earnings are, if there's a conflict, what their stock holdings are, what their liabilities. The forms are very cloudy, and it was only until, I think, two years ago, we didn't even know how much he was making. It was just what they would do is they would say, okay, this is what your earnings is, and you have to fill out this form. And you didn't put a specific number. You put a range. You know, A would be from 1,000 to 10,000, and B, these ranges of – and then they would put the range on the form.
And we have that now, right? And
so no, to make it worse,
okay.
Then if the public asked for the form, they would give you the form, and they would block out the ranges.
Huh.
So you would simply see. So the big reform 2 years ago was – no longer would the range be blocked out. So as you said at your opening, he made about $700,000. The range that he made is between $650,000 and $750,000. So that's in advance. The next question is, what did he do for it? And that's why we put out the word to our readers and to your listeners. If anyone knows, send us an email at Voicers, which is our intake, V-O-I-C-E-R-S at nydailynews.com. And the reason it's such a mystery is the disclosure is so poor, and Silver won't say. He is tied to a big personal injury firm in Manhattan called Weitz & Luxembourg. He is not a partner of the firm. He says he doesn't share in any of their earnings. He is considered what's called of counsel. And years ago, he told us how he does it. And we kind of laid that out in the paper on a few days ago. He says people come to him with cases. Something happened to me. I need a lawyer. He evaluates the cases. The cases that he thinks are promising in terms of success, or there's going to be a likelihood of getting what the client wants, he will pass along to his friends at the law firm. If they pursue it under rules of the courts, if you share, you would get a piece of any return, and that's where he says his money comes from. He says he does this, you know, a few hours a day, usually on Fridays, We went back and checked with his people. They said, yep, hasn't changed. So we did the math, and it comes to about $3,000 an hour just to sit there. And that's assuming everything is as we have
been told. So let me put out the phone number for listeners, since the Daily News is looking for what they call voicers, and this is a good place to make your voice heard here on the radio, 212-433-WNYC. Have you ever been one of those people who went to Sheldon Silver with a potential lawsuit, and Weitz and Luxembourg then took you on, or any other way that Sheldon Silver has represented you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. But, Michael, I wonder if anybody's coming forward, because you're suggesting here, and we'll explore this in a minute, you're suggesting that there may be something wrong with this and something that might have a negative impact on public policy, but people who would have been represented by him won't think that there's anything wrong unless they didn't like the way they were represented. So has anybody actually come forward in the 2 weeks or so that you've had this call out there?
Well, we're still trying to evaluate our next steps. I don't want to tip anything. We want people to stay tuned. But the questions we had were the very same questions that this investigatory commission called the Moreland panel, which Cuomo had put in place about a year ago, had. And these was, I don't know, 20 or 30 people, a lot of prosecutors, big players from across the state were investigating what's going on in Albany. And they came up with a lot of questions. And some of the most pertinent questions were to the legislature. And they wrote letters to these lawyer legislators saying, explain more about this outside income. Who were your clients? What did you do? You know, did you do a house closing for someone? Did you represent someone in a civil matter? Did you prepare a will for someone? No one was looking to breach the lawyer client confidentiality. In fact, the state and city bar associations have written opinions saying there would be no breach of that important confidentiality. You know, if I go to a lawyer, that's private between me and the lawyer. But in terms of these lawmakers, they would be allowed under the canons of the ethics of their profession to disclose what they're doing. So they told the Moreland Commission, go jump in a lake. The Moreland Commission went to court to sue them. They countersued, and the case was sitting before a New York judge. And when Cuomo wanted to do the budget, the legislature said, take this Moreland threat away from us. And he said, okay. So he unplugged the Moreland Commission.
Right.
And I think disappointing those investigators. There was another lawyer paying attention. His name is Preet Bharara. He's a U.S. attorney from Manhattan who's been, you know, trying to arrest, it seems, a member of the legislature every month. Good for him. He went to the Moreland Commission and said, give me your records. Give me your files. Give me your leads. Give me your contacts. I'm going to continue to look. So,
and as you know, he came on the show to announce part of that, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney. So there's a relationship between this and the topic that you're discussing now that we've talked about a lot on this show with Preet Bharara and others, which is Cuomo's questionable disbanding of the Moreland Commission, just as they were maybe starting to get at something in a deal. He did it in a deal with lawmakers for a budget, I guess, or one bill or another. But what are you really looking for here? Because in the case of Sheldon Silver, for example, lots of law firms have so-called rainmakers, big-name lawyers whose connections or reputations bring in clients without that big-name person showing up in court as a mouthpiece. So you would expect silent rainmaker to be the role of someone like Sheldon Silver. So are you suggesting that this secrecy has an impact on public policy? Do ordinary New Yorkers suffer as a result of this secret law practice, you know, beyond just this general sense that there's something too closed here for open government?
We don't know. Hopefully the answer would be no to that question. But for one simple thing, it would be what's called a tort reform. And which the city administration, at least under Bloomberg, I'm not sure where de Blasio stands yet, is a way for people to use the courts to sue for damages. You know, the federal system is more restrained, the state system is more open, and Silver has basically, it's called tort reform overall, but he said, no, we're not going to do that. There's been no debates, no consideration, and is part of that reason simply his belief that he's believed since he was a little boy in the Lower East Side, or is part of it, well, his income would drop in half or fall apart. He has an obligation in our mind, not just to the people of the Lower East Side who voted for him every 2 years, and because he represents the assembly and the way it's kind of a one-man rule. If he doesn't like something, it doesn't move. Even if you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 members of the assembly agree on something. If he doesn't like it, there won't be a hearing, there won't be a bill, it will disappear. There won't be a debate, there won't be a vote. So it's the secrecy in which he conducts his public business in terms of running that chamber. We don't know if his personal interests, which is the whole idea of the disclosure. If you disclose that you have a lot of stocks in the XYZ company, the idea is if the XYZ company is involved in some level of, you know, public discussion, you maybe should recuse yourself, or that would explain why Senator Brian Lehrer is voting this way, because he owns XYZ company. So the hidden...
Hey, you just demoted me.
Oh,
anyway, go ahead.
Are you president? I know you're senator.
No, I'm a private citizen. I'm their boss.
Okay. That's the whole idea. The people are the boss. The people elect Silver. The people elect the other members of the legislature. They are there to represent us. Because we have this system where they can work part-time, the deal is, okay, you can work part-time, but what are you doing? And what are you doing for that money? And you're getting $600,000-$700,000, okay? Are you representing people in divorce proceedings? Okay, we don't need to know
the
details if it's going to breach someone's privacy. Mm-hmm. But his very spare explanations don't satisfy us. And I'm not saying Silver in particular, but the Moreland investigators, they wanted to know more. They were asking and asking, and the legislature actually went to court to block it. If Shelley Silver wants to be a big rainmaker, God bless you. Retire from the assembly, open up your office and make $1 million, and you don't have to tell anyone. Make $1 billion. Good luck for you. But you have an obligation as basically the leader of the state assembly, where the laws are making, which affect everything in New York City and everything in New York State, as to who are you, responsible to.
So, listeners, has Sheldon Silver ever represented you? Or anything else you want to say to Michael Aronson from the Daily News Editorial Board? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Ken in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
So?
I'm a retired physician who practiced in Manhattan and also a past president of the New York County Medical Society. And for years, we have been trying to get tort reform in our state. The Senate has passed it, and it was always blocked by Sheldon Silver. And we as physicians, when we present a paper at a meeting or publish a paper, we have to disclose any conflict of interest. And I think this is an issue of a huge conflict of interest with regard to his activities in the assembly and what he does on the side.
But why wouldn't this just be a policy dispute? Because in general, all liberal Democrats, and Silver is more or less a liberal Democrat, would take the position in the tort reform debate that, though doctors are certainly sympathetic in this, that it's really driven by corporations who just don't want to be responsible for their products. And they want to get out of big product liability, class action suits. And that's really the driving agenda behind all this tort reform. And so whether a Democratic politician is a lawyer or or not, they're generally going to line up where Sheldon Silver is on this as a matter of policy because they think it's the way to protect consumers. So why lay it at the feet of conflict of interest, though granted he certainly is a trial lawyer?
It's my understanding that the medical tort system is different, and the problems have to do with the cap, with the pain and suffering part of the issue. And what's actually happening is we in New York State, and especially in New York City, probably train 50% of the physicians to go out to practice in the country, but they don't stay here in the state because of the regressive tort aspects and the problems of practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some areas that where people can't even find an obstetrician in more rural communities because they can't practice anymore.
Ken, thank you for your call. And I guess, Michael Aronson, this raises the question that you're not currently capable of answering, that none of us are, which is, does Sheldon Silver have a lot of medical malpractice clients? Right?
But we have no idea.
We have no idea. So could there be a potential conflict of interest on his position on medical tort reform in particular? There's no way for the public to discern the answer to that question.
Right. And as Ken made the case very succinctly, you know, this is a real problem. You know, this hospital, that hospital, they're not going to deliver babies anymore. Now, not all of that is laid on the feet of Shelley Silver, but he is a key component to this whole puzzle of how do we deal with malpractice, how do we deal with, insurance, how do we deal with all these other things. And it just goes into a black hole. He stopped things. And the other black hole is where he gets his income from. And, you know, again, we didn't even know what the range was. You know, he kept that secret. Okay, now we know. Now, maybe 2 years ago, he made $3 million. We don't know. All we do know is what's been disclosed in the past year or two under this new system. And we'd like to know a lot more. So, you know, call Brian, call us at the Daily News, and help us explain what's going on here.
212-433-WNYC and Robert in Manhattanville. Robert, you're on WNYC. Hey.
Hi, Brian. I'm a litigator, so I don't do the personal injury work, though I've done some class action work. And let me say this. First of all, I bet you if you look at almost all the lawyers in the New York State Senate, they all have outside practices. Some may be land use. Some may be personal injury. It's the same phenomenon. But I remember that when Governor Pataki was the governor, there were all these allegations, mostly in The Voice, about Libby, his wife, being on boards of companies, some of which they were interlocking relationships with companies doing business. So what's the problem? The real problem here is not tort reform. It's three men in a room. It's the fact that our legislature operates, and the governor, in the most peculiar ways. Your station had on this morning a report about, I think it was by, your transportation reporter, about the Tappan Zee Bridge and the secrecy around how it's getting funded. Now, that has nothing to do with Shelley Silver, but the point is our government, its legislature, and the governorship all operate in this strange, secret way. So to me, it's less about the fact that some legislature has a predilection because of his income. They all do. That's nonsense to say it's just Shelley Silver. It's rather the way that the legislative branch and the executive branch relate to each other and do business in the state. That's really the issue.
Michael Aronson, want to talk to Robert?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, anything you learn in the civic books, you know, how a bill becomes a law, you introduce it. No, forget that. Throw that out. In Albany, you got to get the approval of one guy in the assembly. That's Shelley Silver. The Senate, it's a bit more chaotic because it's been closer, but and traditionally it's been one man in the Senate. And it may be, you know, maybe one or two or a man and a woman, and then the governor. And it's all done behind closed doors. The other 211 members of the legislature are just, you know, props. The committees aren't real. They don't do task force. The debates are phony. Everything comes down to two guys because it's such a controlled, boss-driven system. And he's right. Silver's not alone. The leaders of the Senate do the same thing. But since Silver is the top man, and, you know, again, we don't care what Sheldon Silver does in his private life. We care what he does in his public life.
So should you, and we're going to run out of time soon, but should you then at the Daily News be taking more of a high horse position, or the kind of activist, you know, crowdsourcing project that you're doing with this, trying to flesh out who some of Shelley Silver's clients are, with the power structure within the legislature? By contrast, I guess we see Melissa Mark Viverito now, the Speaker of the New York City Council, actually distributing power. This is in response to the perception that Christine Quinn took too much power for herself as Speaker of the City Council. Now it looks like committees, even if the Speaker opposes the bill, could bring things to the floor for a vote. You can't do that in the New York State Senate or the New York State Assembly. Should that be where your attention is focused at least as much?
Our attention is always on that, to trying to empower members who are ultimately elected by their constituents. But it's such a calcified system. I don't mean calcified, oh, just so frozen in place that we have to crack at it. And the only ways to crack at this is arresting someone, which Preet Bharara does with regularity, and trying to find the weak points. And here is a point that the man in charge of the assembly, the single boss, okay, the head man there, is making, you know, upwards of $1 million doing we don't know what. And you know what? Show and tell, Shelley. Obviously, reform, open up the assembly. That's the ultimate goal. But, you know, we've been beating that, as the other editorial pages across the state, for years and years. Yeah. He doesn't care. This might be a weak point. And if someone comes forward and say, oh, this is what I did for Shelley, this is what I did for, for Shelley did for me, excuse me.
Oh, wait. I have one. I think I have one. Liz in Tarrytown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
So?
Well, I was just saying that 14 years ago, Sheldon Silver represented my mother because she was hit by a car, and his brother was the surgeon, and that's how she got her lawyer, but it was always impossible to get him on the phone, and it went on, and I just felt like it was a conflict of interest, and it was pretty bad representation. It was just pretty annoying, so I didn't feel like he was actually a very good attorney towards her, and I didn't really understand what he was doing representing her.
Why was he involved at all at the same time that he was in the state legislature? Is it clear to you why he had an interest in your mother's case at all?
His brother was the doctor, right?
Yeah, I think that his interest was in the...
Oh, his own brother? Shelley Silver's brother was the doctor?
Yeah, I think his interest had to do with the money he got.
This is great.
Go ahead, Michael.
Liz, can you contact us at the Daily News?
Sure.
Hang on, we'll take your contact information off the air, and then we'll make sure to put you in touch. I didn't completely understand that story. I guess I misunderstood that story.
Okay, Shelley Silver has, I think he passed away a number of years ago, has a brother who's a physician. I think he was in Brooklyn.
Right.
I forgot the man's name, but he was an established medical doctor. And what it sounds as though is that Liz's mother was in some type of accident where the treating physician was Dr. Silver, and somehow it went from brother Silver to Shelley Silver,
right,
saying, now you need a lawyer. Oh, you need a lawyer? Take my brother.
Now I get it.
And, hey, I'm glad I came on the show.
Because you got a live one, and she didn't like his representation.
We got a lead.
One bonus question on
sure.
The topic that we did on the show last hour, some people are still listening, which was an assessment of the de Blasio administration on crime and respectful policing after 6 months in office. And people were debating whether the demise of Stop and Frisk has anything to do with the rise in shootings in the city this year, even though it's still the second lowest year on record, as I understand it, second only to last year. There is still an increase, and it's at the same time that they're taking out Stop and Frisk. And I saw that yesterday in the Daily News. You published an op-ed by two crime stat researchers who said that it's too early to try and find a correlation between less aggressive policing and the crime rate under Bratton. And then on the editorial page, you published basically a takedown of the op-ed that your paper ran, saying that the city needs to entertain the possibility that it was disastrously wrong in ramping down stop and frisk. So I don't know if you were one of the writers of that editorial, but do you think we can draw a correlation between the slight rise in shootings and Bratton's tactics? Our advocate guest last hour said shootings were actually higher in 2011 when stop and frisk was at its peak.
Well, this is it's a good question, and you saw we had a debate on the pages of the paper yesterday.
Right.
We've talked to Bratton, and Bratton is going to try and figure it out, and we're very encouraged with that. And these researchers, I think it's Mr. Silverman, and I forgot the other fellow's name, are saying, no, there's no connection. And our attitude is, let's look, okay? Bill Bratton is, you know, a world-renowned police expert. He knows NYPD. He knows the city. And he wants to look. And we're very encouraged that he's going to look. You know, we hope it's not the case. We don't want shootings to go up. But in their eagerness to say, we're not going to do, you know, stop, question, and sometimes frisk, we just want to see, is there a connection? And so Bratton trying to evaluate that, we see as a hopeful sign. These gentlemen are poo-pooing the idea, and we say, you know, what kind of science is that? When you're doing an investigation, whether it's a police investigation or a scientific survey, you have to look at all of the possible reasons, and Bratton's doing that.
And Bratton's doing that, and it's early on, so they'll follow this over time and see what they conclude. Michael Aronson, member of the Daily News Editorial Board, thanks for joining us on Shelley Silver and a little bit on the spike in shootings in New York. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, still to come on this morning's program, the spike in personal drone use. Yes, personal drone use in New York City airspace. Legal? Safe? And an alarm clock to tell you when it's time to go to sleep? Arianna Huffington's been trying that. She'll talk about it, along with Laura Walker, our own, and other top managers on pro sleep policies coming from the workplace. Stay with us.